The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Broadcasting coast to coast and border to border from Memphis, Tennessee, it's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
And hello, America. Welcome to the Todd Starnes Radio Show. Good to have you with us. Wake up, everybody. Yeah, Joe Biden's speech, it's over now. Wow. What a snoozer. No crowd, and the same We Hate America rhetoric. So it was just another speech for Joe Biden, and we're going to get into that in just a few minutes. Now, longtime listeners of this radio program, you know we do not have guests during the first section of the program. We have two exceptions. Number one is President Trump, and the other is Senator Ted Cruz, who is alive, and he is certainly awoke. Not awake, but I don't. Senator, welcome to the program. Hope you're doing good.
Todd, great to be with you. Always good to be back.
I got to tell you, I know they're giving you a hard time on the social media about taking a nap last night, but I say it's whatever works, whatever can get you through the speech.
Well, look, the speech droned on for more than an hour, and it was hard to stay awake for any of it. I got to say, I had summed up the speech actually before Joe gave it. I summed up the speech in three words: boring but radical. And I think that's a very deliberate strategy, and I think it sums up the first 100 days of the Biden administration, that they have made a political decision and a strategic decision to be as boring as humanly possible. Think back to last night to remember anything notable Joe Biden says. Nothing stands out. Nothing is seared in the memory. Think, to be honest, of the last 100 days, anything notable Joe Biden has said. He's deliberately, most days he makes no news at all. And I think they've decided that after 4 years of President Trump, after 4 years of the president dominating the news every single day, that people were weary and a boring president was politically advantageous to them. But it's also, and this is the really troubling part, being boring is a mask for a radical agenda. In the first 100 days on substance and policy, we have seen the most radical agenda any president has ever put forward in the history of this country, and it's an agenda that's dangerous. And that speech last night, even though it was hard to stay awake, the substance of what Biden was saying was deeply dangerous for the country.
No, you're absolutely right, and even then, Senator, it was not enough. You have a lot of people out there saying that he should have gone further on border and opening up the border. That was not addressed last night, and he's catching blowback from the progressives on that.
Well, Joe Biden has made the decision to hand control of the agenda over to the radical left, over to the socialists, over to Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and AOC. And that's who's driving the train right now. And it is truly terrifying, whether it's the crisis at the border. And President Biden said not a word about how to solve the crisis at the border last night, the humanitarian crisis, the public health crisis, the over 2 million people who are projected to cross illegally into this country because of the mistakes Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have already made. He had not a word to say about that. What he did have a lot to say about is wanting to spend an additional $6 trillion. And I got to say, I've joked, please nobody tell the Democrats what comes after trillion. These numbers are just staggering, and he wants to pay for all of this by the most stunning array of new taxes. If you pay taxes, if you're working, your taxes are going up. Because Joe Biden, he wants to raise individual tax rates. He wants to raise corporate tax rates. He wants to raise taxes on small businesses. He wants to raise capital gains taxes. He wants to raise the death tax. And every one of those, they're going up by trillions at a time where the economy is millions of small businesses are just starting to open their doors and get back on their feet. And Biden and Harris want to hammer them with new taxes to pay for their socialist brave new world.
I could not have said it better, Senator. You're absolutely right in describing that. Real quick, I want to get to your Wall Street Journal column in just a moment, but I would like to get your reaction on Senator Tim Scott. I mean, that's a tough speech to deliver anyway, but I thought he was very effective last night.
So I think Tim did a terrific job. Tim is a good friend, and Tim is someone who understands firsthand the miracle that is opportunity in America. Tim is someone who understands firsthand. Tim is a conservative for the same reason I'm a conservative, because we understand that the free enterprise system has been the greatest avenue for prosperity, for opportunity, for advancement that the world has ever seen. And you know, when Tim was able to get up last night and describe how his grandfather in one lifetime had seen the journey from cotton to Congress in 94 years, that is the miracle of America. And it's in contrast to the message from Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and the left that America is bad, America is evil, America is racist. I was very glad when Tim said last night, America is not a racist country. The other side is peddling lies, and the lies are destructive. And I believe the answer to lies is truth. The answer to darkness is light. And I think Tim provided a lot of truth and a lot of light last night.
You know, Senator, I've got to give you great credit here for this incredible piece you wrote in the Wall Street Journal. Your woke money is no good here. And you made a pretty stunning announcement about PAC dollars yesterday.
So I did. You know, all of us, I think, are growing more and more concerned by the increasing wokeness of big business, of corporate America, where more and more big corporate CEOs are getting in bed with the radical left, are becoming the woke enforcers of the Democratic Party. We saw all these CEOs blasting the Georgia voter integrity law, blasting the Texas voter integrity law, typically not knowing anything of the facts that are in the laws, but simply giving in to the left-wing mob and acting like political thugs. And it is a deeply troubling tendency. It you know, was probably most egregiously manifested in Major League Baseball yanking the All-Star game out of Atlanta. Atlanta is a 51% African American city, and they yanked it out to move it to Denver, a 9% African American city, because they care about racial justice so much. It's absurd. And so what I wrote in the Wall Street Journal today is, as of today, I will no longer accept money from corporate PACs, not even a penny. And over the 9 years I've been in the Senate, corporate PACs have given me a total of $2.6 million. They've been regular supporters, but I've decided enough is enough, that not another cent is going to come from corporate PACs, because if they are going to be the woke enemy of the people, I don't want their money, and they needn't bother calling.
Now, Senator, this is certainly going to pack a punch for you. I mean, that's $2.6 million. Was that a tough decision to come to? A tough decision to make for you?
You know, it wasn't really. I made the decision that I'm going to rely on the people, and we've been blessed to have had millions of supporters, of small dollar supporters, that have given $5 or $10 or $25 individually, and it has been the grassroots and the people that have been the principal financial supporters of me in the past, and that's who I work for, and that's whose money I rely on in the political world.
And the reality is that there could be some blowback for these businesses, as you point out, and I was stunned to see this. Coca-Cola's $12 billion in back taxes?
Well, there's a lot of cronyism and corporate welfare in Washington, and too many Republicans have been open to that corporate welfare, and that's one of the things I'm calling on, is enough with the corporate welfare. These guys are not our friends. They're not the friends of the American people, and when they come with their hand out, The answer should be no. Now, Todd, I'm going to have to apologize. I've got to run to the floor because we're in the middle of a vote, so I'm about to miss the vote if I don't,
Senator,
vote, don't run off.
Senator, we appreciate your time, and thank you again, and congratulations. Thanks for taking such a rock-solid stand for the American people.
God bless. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
All right. That's Senator Ted Cruz, and we got word late last night he wanted to jump on the program and talk about this announcement. And honestly, I think, and I wish we had time to ask one other question of the senator. I'd like to know how many other Republican senators are going to join him in this cause. Again, when our lawmakers, our elected leaders, when they're getting these million-dollar checks from big business, that has an influence in how they vote. The idea that Coca-Cola has $12 billion, $12 billion in back taxes. Meanwhile, the IRS, if you or I owe, what, $100, $200, what happens? Yeah, they come after us. They'll garnish your wages. But they let Coca-Cola get by with $12 billion. And why is that? Why is that? It's because these lawmakers are beholden to big business. Senator Ted Cruz says, not anymore. And I say good for Senator Cruz. And I hope that more Republican senators follow his lead in this effort. So look, we're going to restart the show here. We're going to take a break here. We've got to pay some bills, some great commercials, and promote our sponsors. When we come back, I want to get your reaction to President Biden's address last night. Are you concerned about the direction of this country under the rule of Democrats? 844-747-8868 is our toll-free number. Maybe you want to weigh in on what Senator Ted Cruz is doing. Maybe you should be calling your senator and asking if they will join that cause. 844-747-8868. This is the Todd Starnes Show.
From the front lines of the culture war, it's Todd Starnes.
Today, kids are being taught that the color of their skin defines them again. And if they look a certain way, they're an oppressor. From colleges to corporations to our culture, people are making money and gaining power by pretending we haven't made any progress at all. By doubling down on the divisions we've worked so hard to heal. You know this stuff is wrong. Hear me clearly. America is not a racist country. It's backwards to fight discrimination with different types of discrimination, and it's wrong to try to use our painful past to dishonestly shut down debates in the present.
I've got to tell you something, folks. I really enjoyed that speech from Senator Tim Scott. It was really night and day difference than what sleepy Joe Biden gave to the nation. I mean, people were literally falling asleep all over the Capitol yesterday. Unbelievable. But here you have Tim Scott, the senator from South Carolina, delivering what is really a tough speech. We all remember Bobby Jindal when he delivered the speech. He sounded like Ben Shapiro on Red Bull. I mean, you could barely understand the guy, just sped red through the whole speech. Then you had Senator Marco Rubio, who took the infamous sip of water during the speech. It's just hard to deliver a speech like that when there's not an audience in front of you, when you've got to look directly into the television camera. And I thought he was effective. And I thought Senator Scott really hit a home run on some of the issues, especially on the issue of race in America. I mean, you've got Joe Biden out there saying that what happened on January the 6th at the Capitol building, where unarmed American citizens were allowed entry into the building when Capitol Police stood down, when the only person who was killed, who was shot by a police officer on Capitol grounds. Joe Biden says that is the worst attack on democracy since the Civil War. Now, I want you to think about that for a moment. This is a big deal. Because Joe Biden is telling us that what happened in January was worse than Pearl Harbor. What happened in January was worse than what happened on September 11th, 2001, the day when Muslims waged jihad on American soil and killed thousands of our fellow American citizens. Joe Biden is saying what happened in January is worse than all of that. And then he turns around and he says that the greatest terrorist threat, it's not the Islamic radicals anymore. Cut number nine.
The threat has evolved way beyond Afghanistan. Those of you in the intelligence committees, the foreign relations committee, defense committees, you know well, we have to remain vigilant against the threats to the United States wherever they come from. Al-Qaeda and ISIS are in Yemen, Syria, Somalia, other places in Africa, in the Middle East and beyond. And we won't ignore what our intelligence agencies have determined to be the most lethal terrorist threat to the homeland today. White supremacy is terrorism. We're not going to ignore that either. My fellow Americans, look, we have to come together to heal the soul of this nation.
So Biden now says that the greatest terrorist threat is not Antifa. It's not Black Lives Matter. It's white supremacy. He offered no evidence. There's no documentation to back up that accusation. But I contend, ladies and gentlemen, the greater threat is not white supremacy. It's the white people in Antifa and Black Lives Matter who are burning down our cities, who are pillaging and plundering and looting our stores, who are marching through our neighborhoods, who are clashing with the police, sending hundreds, if not thousands, of police officers over the past, 2 years to the hospital. That, in my estimation, is the greater threat to America. But Joe Biden can't say that because those are Maxine Waters' goons. They're the hired muscle of the DNC. So Joe Biden can't go out there and beat up these people in the streets. So what they do is they go out and they hire people like Black Lives Matter and Antifa to target conservatives. And we've seen this play out from day one. I mean, how many times have Trump supporters been attacked over the past 4 or 5 years? Maxine Waters, you got to absolutely harass them. You got to get in their faces. It doesn't matter if they're at the grocery store or the gas station or a restaurant. You got to get in their faces and absolutely harass them. Joe Biden himself, Mr. Kent, we all get along. Let's sing Kumbaya together. Called conservative Christians the dregs of society. This is not a man who wants to unite us. Oh, by the way, I was watching CNN, the most profane name in news, and I inoculated myself beforehand. And I just wanted to see what the reaction was over at CNN. And they had Van Jones. Van Jones was talking about the speech, and they got the tingles. I don't like to use this word very often, but it was as if all of the CNN anchors experienced orgasm listening to Joe Biden's speech last night. I mean, they were giggly, they were tingly, and they were gushing heaps of praise on Joe Biden's speech. It was a horrible speech. And Van Jones is actually, and we do not have this audio. I was searching for it and I can't find it, but I was watching as Van Jones last night after the speech said that that Joe Biden, his voice, it was a grandfatherly, whispery voice. It was really beautiful. Beautiful. Jeez, Luke, get a room. Take that off the TV. Put that behind some sort of a pay-per-view wall. Nobody wants to hear that kind of stuff. Come on. All right, we got to take a break here. 844-747-8868, toll-free telephone number. That's 844-747-8868. This is the Todd Starnes Show. Oh, for crying out loud. So over at Twitter, you know, they block, if you sneeze wrong, they will block you over on Twitter. And so anyway, Twitter's allowing people to use a racial slur to describe Senator Tim Scott, who is black, by the way. But that really doesn't matter to us because, you know, what matters is the content of his character, not the color of his skin. But anyway, they're calling him Uncle Tim on Twitter, and they're allowing that to happen. So they're not blocking. They're not blocking anybody for using a racial slur to describe Senator Tim Scott, the great senator from South Carolina. All right, folks, Joe Biden says that all of you, and by the way, he never mentioned Trump last night, but he was talking about Trump and his supporters. And what Biden was saying, when he was talking about what happened in January, where unarmed people were invited into the Capitol building as the police officers stood down, when that happened, he said that was the greatest threat to democracy since the Civil War. What he was basically saying is that you, Trump supporters, who are standing up and accusing the election of being a fraud, you are the biggest threat since the Civil War. Now, I want to go to the phone. Some of you folks want to talk about this. What do you think is the biggest threat to America? 844-747-8868. Let's go to Maine. Richard, listening to us on WLOB. Hi, Richard. What's on your mind?
Hi, Todd. Thanks for taking my call, brother. Say, listen, we need you to take that one more step. That one more step would be calling the Democrat Party out for what they are. They're a communist party. We need to be clear. We need to be crystal clear about this. Okay? They are the biggest threat to this United States of America since the Civil War, because they're the ones that started the Civil War. History bears that out. I'm not saying anything that people don't already know that's learned from history in high school. But I'm going to take that one step further. This Democrat Party, this Communist Democrat Party, is a bigger threat to us than the tyrannical government of the King of Britain before the Revolutionary War. That's tyranny. That's what we're fighting against now. The King of Britain called the Sons of Liberty insurrectionists when they climbed aboard the ship in Boston Harbor and poured tea into the harbor. This is what the Democrat Party is doing to us right now. They're calling us insurrectionists. The assault on the Capitol was on Lexington and Concord. The killing, the cold-blooded killing of Ashley Babbitt, that was the shot heard around the world. This president is not our president. Donald Trump is our president. And we need all those Republicans, both in the House and Senate, to start standing up and calling these people out for what they are. They're going to call us racist. They're going to call us Islamophobes. They're going to call us xenophobes. Well, we need to call them out for what they are, treasonous traitors. And I thank you for your time.
Richard, look, no. Look, Richard, thanks for the call here. And there's a lot to unpack in what you said. The reality of it, folks, is that the Democrats are exactly what they accuse Republicans of being. This is how they operate. When they're out there calling, Marjorie Taylor Greene, when they go out there and call Marjorie Taylor Greene a racist, what they're actually saying is, well, actually, we're the racist, but we're just going to blame her. So they project. That's what the Democrats do. And Richard from Maine is absolutely right. The Democrats are the ones who left the country. They're the ones behind the Civil War. It was the Democrats behind the Klan. As a matter of fact, the Democrats were endorsing the Klan all the way up into the 1960s and beyond. Keep in mind, it was Democrats who stood in the way of civil rights legislation in the 1960s. The Republicans were trying to advance the cause, but the Democrats stood in their way. I know they don't teach this in high school anymore. They should, but they don't. And that's why it's important, moms and dads, if you have a child, maybe they're homeschooled, it might be good for them just to sit down and listen to the radio. You can watch us on our Facebook live stream so we can inform the next generation about who the Democrats really are. And I'm with Richard. I believe these Democrats are shoving us down the path to communism. And when you look at all of these policies, $6 trillion, ladies and gentlemen, $6 trillion. Who do you think is going to be paying for that? You see, ultimately, they want all of us holding out our hands to big government. That's what they want. And that's what they're going to get. By the way, Chris Wallace, the registered Democrat over at Fox News Channel, oh, he loved what happened last night. Cut number two, please.
Going to be a popular speech with the American public. He offered a lot of stuff. If $4 trillion will buy a lot of stuff, from millions of jobs to child care to community health centers, all kinds of stuff, community colleges. And the other thing that's pretty popular is he said, you're not going to have to pay for it. Big corporations are going to pay for it. People making more than $400,000 are going to pay for it, but the vast majority of people watching tonight aren't. So offering a lot of stuff and saying you aren't going to have to pay for it is pretty popular. And I think they've made a calculation that after COVID, that people have come to have a different feeling about government, that they now feel more trusting and more the need of government. And so that where this might have turned a lot of people off, and probably still will, that they believe the majority of people are going to say, you know, the government's here and they're here to help you.
So, wow. Ask, you know what, Chris Wallace ought to ask Ronald Reagan how he feels about that. Those are the scariest words in American history. We're the government and we're here to help. Because, you know, all you know what's about to break loose. That's... And Chris Wallace, can I just say something about my former colleagues over at Fox News? So there are most of the people you see on the channel, on TV, are good people. And a few of them are actually true conservatives. But whenever you hear someone on Fox News, like Chris Wallace, for example, say, oh, well, I'm fair and balanced. That is code that when you hear someone like Chris Wallace say that, that is code for I'm a Democrat. Or when you hear, well, I'm one of the journalists at Fox News, that is code for I'm a radical leftist. So whenever you hear anybody on Fox News and you know who they are, you'll hear them say, well, that's just Sean Hannity. That's prime time. I happen to be one of the journalists at Fox News. Well, the fact of the matter is the journalists at Fox News are not the ones paying the light bill. Sean Hannity is. Tucker Carlson, Laura Ingraham, those are the people that are paying the bills and bringing in the big dollars. Not these radical leftists they have hired as journalists at the Fox News quarter of the world. All right, let's go to the phones here. 844-747-8868. Want to squeeze in a call. Keith, listening to us on KARN. All right, Keith, what's going on?
Hello, Todd. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
The comment you said about Senator Kim, you said that was a racial slur. Well, I think he needs to get on Twitter going, I never knew I had so many nephews and nieces out there. Where have y'all been all my life?
Now, well, now, Keith, this is a good point you raise. they're calling him Uncle Tim. I know where you're going with that, my friend, but the reality is they meant that as a racial slur. And why is that? Because the Democrat Party is a racist party. They don't care about anybody or anything except power. That's the only thing these Democrats care about. That's why you have children literally living in cages reading Kamala Harris's children's book right now. This is why you have children, illegal alien children, being sold into slavery and the sex trafficking industry. And what are the Democrats doing here? They're doing absolutely nothing. I want to prove my point. There's a horrible thing that happened in North Carolina, near Boone, North Carolina. Two sheriff's deputies were killed. They were responding to a call at a home in North Carolina One of the deputies was shot on the spot. Another one was shot and wounded and was trapped inside. There is an hours-long standoff. Three other people were also killed. The gunman took his own life. Again, this happened in Watauga County, North Carolina, about 100 or so miles northwest of Charlotte. Sergeant Chris Ward and K-9 Deputy Logan Fox were on a routine welfare check. And by the way, these are the welfare checks that they wanted to send unarmed psychologists to. The gunman opened fire and killed the two deputies. Now, I want to ask you a question. Did you hear about this on the national news last night? Did you see wall-to-wall coverage? I mean, this was an hours-long standoff. Did they break into coverage on CNN or MSDNC or Fox News? I watch Newsmax, and I know Newsmax TV covered this. But where was the wall-to-wall coverage on the other television networks? There was none. By the way, do you know that Joe Biden, at least up until noon 46, at 12:46 Eastern time, Joe Biden has yet to offer his condolences to the families of the two deputies who got gunned down. Black Lives Matter, they haven't issued a statement. Neither has Antifa. Nobody has. Why is that? It's because of the double standard. It's one of two reasons why Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have not weighed in on this horrible tragedy in North Carolina. It's either because the deputies are white, or it's because they are, in fact, law enforcement, and they just don't care. So I want you to think about that. It's all, folks, it's all about the narrative with these people. That's what it's all about, the narrative. But they don't care about these two deputies who got shot. As a matter of fact, in the deep, dark crevices of what it would be their soul, they actually probably just shrugged their shoulders and said, oh, well, that's who the Democrats are. I know it's tough. It's a tough conversation to have, but you need to know who these people are and how evil these people are. We got to take a break. 844-747-8868, toll-free telephone number. That's 844-747-8868. This is the Todd Starnes Show.
It's Radio Free America. Todd Starnes.
All right, I have a question for you guys. There's a story in the news. This is from Tate County, Mississippi. A 12-year-old boy confessed to intentionally torturing and burning a dog, a beautiful Labrador retriever named Buddy, Buddy the dog. And according to WREG, which is a television station in the Memphis area, the young man, 12 years old, confessed to the crime. But the Tate County Sheriff's Department says they are not going to charge the 12-year-old for torturing a dog. Now, if the kid were of age, he would be facing a felony crime, and he would be facing up to 3 years in prison. But they're not even going to give this kid a slap on the wrist. It's just, no charges at all. The dog was located last week with an electrical cord tied around his neck and severe burns to his body. A veterinarian told the television station the dog appeared to have third and fourth degree burns on his face, second degree burns in his ears, and other burns around the eyes. Now, my question to you, what do you think they should do with this kid? Honestly, I would have charged the child as an adult. I would have just thrown the book at the... You know, seriously, if you've got a kid like that and they're doing those kinds of things to animals, you got a problem on your hands. I mean, you're looking at somebody who is probably going to grow up and not be a productive member of society. This is some ugly stuff here. What kind of a lesson is the kid learning when you don't even charge? You set the cat on fire, you hang the dog, and there are no charges? What kind of a message does that send? So I'm curious, what would you have done here? You have the ability to mete out some sort of a punishment on this kid. What would you do? 844-747-8868. That's 844-747-8868. I got to tell you, the kid would be in jail. If it was up to me, the kid would be in jail. That's not a good situation right there. Oh, the TV station, they have a photograph of the poor dog. The dog's entire face is bandaged. From the ears all the way down to the nose, and it has to wear one of these giant cones. You got to feel bad for the dog. Buddy the dog. Unbelievable. Meanwhile, apparently a new Michael Jordan shoe is coming out, and people are standing in line all over the place. Hours and hours and hours they're standing in line. And it got me to thinking, you know, that in Georgia, they came under fire because, you know, they don't want people going at just voter to voter and giving them water and food. But I'm wondering, what about the Nike stores? Are they offering people food and beverage and a place to use the bathroom? I mean, that could be a civil rights violation if they don't. I don't know. But that's horrible. By the way, coming up in the next hour of the show, our good friend, Congressman Jody Heiss, is going to be here. Also, a little bit later on, Senator Marsha Blackburn. And we're going to be talking to an Hispanic American who is running for office in New York City. He wants to be the next mayor of New York City. And we're going to be talking to him. Going to be a great conversation. There's a lot going on in New York City as Comrade Bill de Blasio realizes that his goose is cooked. So anyway, we're going to get to all of those stories. Also, this news just breaking, NBC News reporting that the FDA will begin the process of banning menthol tobacco cigarettes and all flavored cigars. So if you're one of these guys out there, you smoke a cigar and you have a flavored cigar, that could soon be against the law. Now, I just want to throw this out there. If they're going to ban flavored cigars, what about flavored water? I mean, where do you draw the line with this stuff? You know, I don't smoke, and I don't necessarily enjoy, I cannot stand cigarette smoke or marijuana smoke. But you know what? If you're going to start banning all of this stuff, where do you draw the line? Unbelievable. So, look, a lot of you folks want to weigh in on this dog story, and we're going to get to your calls right after the break. We got to take a break here for the news. 844-747-8868. What do you do with these kids that are torturing these animals? 844-747-8868. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show.
Broadcasting coast to coast and border to border from Memphis, Tennessee. It's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging deplorable.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Stearns.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Hour 2 of the Big Show. Good to have you with us today. Go ahead and write down our telephone number. You will need this if you want to call in. Oh, and we're going to talk about racial yoga. I'm very excited about this topic. That's coming up in just a matter of mere moments. Also, Senator Marsha Blackburn, Congressman Jody Heiss coming up. Going to be a great, great rest of the show. 844-747-8868 is our toll-free telephone number. That's 844-747-8868. We have the live show blog up and running over at toddstearns.com and some great stories for you to see there. A disturbing story, and we talked about this briefly at the end of the last hour, and a couple of folks want to weigh in on this. But in Tate County, Mississippi, a 12-year-old boy set fire to a dog, a Labrador retriever. Buddy the dog is the victim, and then tied an electrical cord around the dog's neck. The dog survived and is expected to make a recovery, but it's clearly an incredibly horrible situation. Now, the sheriff says that they're not going to charge the kid because he's 12 years old. And I say that's a load of hooey. And I'm curious to know what sort of punishment you would administer if this was your dog or if you were in charge. I can assure you that Grace Baker, who is on Dalmatian maternity leave this week, she'll be back tomorrow. I guarantee you that she would be fighting tooth and nail if that were her Dalmatian. So let's go to the phones here. Stephen, listening to us on our flagship station, KWAM, Memphis, Tennessee. Hey, Stephen, what's going on?
Hey, Todd, love your show. Been listening a long time. So as Paul Harvey used to say, unfortunately, the rest of the story is due to Mississippi law, the sheriff is really upset. He can't legally charge this kid with a crime, so his hands are tied. So they need to take a look at the laws in Mississippi. Now, what he can do, if they don't want to charge him with a crime, they could charge him as a danger to society and have his rear end locked up in a mental facility, because I think we've got a budding serial killer on our hands.
You know, honestly, Stephen, whenever I hear these kinds of stories about a child doing something to an animal, that's exactly what I'm worried about, is this could be a future serial killer. It's one of the signs, and it's a warning sign.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, the sheriff is really devastated, but he legally, his hands are tied. But my suggestion to that sheriff is have that child declared a danger to society. Put him in a mental facility or a psychiatric facility. At least that way, I'm not saying there's a chance, but at least somebody can evaluate this kid and they get him on record.
Well, there's got to be more to this, Stephen, because surely they have juvenile courts down there. So clearly there is some system in place if a kid breaks the law. It's beyond me that this kid is just not even going to get a slap on the wrist. They're like, yep, no charges.
Look it up, but when I first saw the story, I was outraged too, and they said Mississippi law, for whatever reason, does not allow them to charge anybody 12 or under with any crime. And I'm like, that's insane.
That is insane, and we're going to look into this as well. We'll see what the Mississippi bar has to say about it. This is outrageous. Stephen, thank you for the call, and thank you for listening to KWAM. Let's go to Chris, listening to us on The Talk Station in North Carolina. Hi, Chris. What's going on?
Hello, Todd. I got to tell you, I hope your day is going well, and thank you for bringing this to our attention. The child needs faith. I mean, send him to Teen Challenge. Obviously, he's got destructive behavioral tendencies. Demons are working overtime, so you know, let's get this kid in the right direction. And I mean, if the judicial system being at 12 years old is definitely not an option, Teen Challenge, I mean, put the kid to the challenge. Let's see if we can get him, you know, on track with where his life needs to be, and not look in the rearview mirror of what necessarily let's stay positive about this. And you know, I don't know what the history is behind the 12-year-old, but little buddy, I'm glad to hear that, you know, he is definitely still with us and all. And I would say Teen Challenge, definitely.
So send the kid to rehab, and you're recommending Teen Challenge. And I believe is that a faith-based rehab center, Chris? Mm-hmm.
That it is. There's one in Indiana that I know of for sure, and there's another one in Virginia, and he's Idaho. He's perfect for it. Let's rescue this child.
Yeah, well, I mean, clearly a very troubled child, and we don't know much about the family background, but again, the idea you're just going to let somebody who does something like this just walk away without so much as, you know, being grounded or, you know, having their ice cream taken away. I mean, you got to do something. It's just, this is insane. Chris, thank you for the call. Thanks for listening to us. Let's go to Dee, listening to us on WDUN, our great affiliate in Gainesville, Georgia. All right, Dee, what do you want to say?
I want to say they need to do something to this boy that's 12 years old that has done this to this dog. I've got a dog, and all it likes is talking, and it's like a little angel from heaven. And do something to this boy, send him to a boy's prison or something to get him some help, because if they'll do that to a dog, they will do that to a child or someone else as he gets older.
You know,
I've always heard that.
You know, Dee, and Dee, I have as well. And what bothers me here, Dee, is the message this is sending. So if the kid's not going to get in trouble, he's going to go out there and he's going to go after somebody else's pet. I mean, it could be a bunny rabbit, it could be a cat. You don't know, but there's got to be some sort of a punishment here, so this kid can understand what he did is a crime.
It's God's creation, and they're put here for us to love and look after, not to be tortured. That little boy needs to be in confinement himself.
Well said, Dee. Thank you for calling in, and God bless you, and thanks for listening to WDUN. Well, a lot of folks want to weigh in on this. And, you know, when you look at dogs, man's best friend, and the love and nurture. Grace Baker came by with the dog, and I'm going to let her tell the story tomorrow, but she came by the office a little while ago and showed us her brand-new little baby puppy, and the thing was just adorable. And to think that there are evil people out there that are going to go out, and that's what this kid did. It's evil. And I would be willing to bet that the child comes from a broken home, or there's something else going on in the home where all of this was allowed to happen. Let's go to WLOB, Portland, Maine. That's Ray Richardson country, by the way. Elizabeth, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
What do you think they ought to do to this kid, Elizabeth?
I think they ought to have him for at least 2 years working in a shelter for animals where there's been evidence of cruelty to them, to learn how to treat them, to learn how the impact is on them from what people do to them. And I just gave your person the experience I've had in my own life. I was raised in quite a severe home, and I raised my children that way, and I've seen the impact on them for trying to reach out and find love in their lives. And now I look at it, and I'm full of love, but I find it's very difficult for them to respond to me. And I think for a young fellow, he just needs to be exposed for a good length of time. And it's not a one day a month thing. I think it has to be happening like after school every day. And I think that we learn through our experiences of life. And I do believe that is one that sadly is carried on from generation to generation if there is no ability to teach in a different way.
Well, look, Elizabeth, good thoughts there. And you know, maybe that would be a solution. I don't know, send the kid off to military camp, military school. He needs some tough love.
I disagree with that. I think he needs love. I think he needs teaching love. And it's about caring for other people and other animals and learning how to care for them. And he obviously doesn't have that experience.
All right. Well, Elizabeth, we're going to leave it there. Folks, Elizabeth from Maine says it needs to be love, not necessarily tough love. I think you could administer tough love and get a pretty good result at the end of the day. 844-747-8868. Let's go to Greg, North Little Rock, Arkansas, listening to us on KARN. All right, Greg, what would you do?
Hey, well, I'll tell you what I did with my son. This happened a couple of years back. My oldest boy was walking the dog, and I was washing dishes. And I saw him grab a stick off the tree and hit the dog. And I dropped everything I did. I went and got that stick, and I whooped my boy with the same stick he whooped the dog with. And then I got put under DHS investigation for 6 months.
Wait, for hitting your kid with the, I mean, how old was your kid?
The same. He was 12 at the time.
12 years old, and so it was like a stick, like a switch, I guess, that you would...
A stick off a tree.
Oh, geez, Aloo.
He broke it off the tree and hit the dog. I saw it, and I took that same stick, and I hit him with it. And then I got put under investigation for the Department of Human Services.
Well, what happened? What was the outcome of all of that, Greg? So you got, I mean, did you get in trouble?
Nothing, because I told y'all, well, no, under, besides the investigation. But I told him, I said, you know, he's going to do that to a dog. I'm going to do it to him. I'm a firm believer, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth.
Well, let me ask you, did your kid ever hit the dog with a stick again?
Never.
Well, there you
he
go.
He has never.
There you go. All right. Well, Greg, hate to do this, but we got to skedaddle for a break. I'm telling you, corporal punishment, and a lot of states have outlawed, have banned corporal punishment, but when there is no consequence for your action, you get this. And that's a very tragic thing that happened in the state of Mississippi. Oh, we do have to take a break. 844-747-8868. This is the Todd Stern Show.
About to back up and bring it. It's Todd Starnes.
All right, Michael writes in on the Facebook live stream, Todd, actually, Obama is very likely the incognito president, now continuing his evil agenda that he launched over the 8 years he was president. He did what he said he would do, fundamentally change America. He intentionally and methodically destroyed America and now has the opportunity to continue his evil work as the agent of his father. Oh, so Papa Obama would be Lucifer in that. I get it. Yeah, look, Michael, there are a lot of people that believe Barack Hussein Obama is quietly pulling all of the strings. He is the godfather of the Biden administration. And I think there's a lot of evidence to back that up. But I do have a question for you. Senator Tim Scott catching a lot of flack from the racist Democrats because he said America is not a racist nation. Do you agree with that? Or do you believe that America is a racist nation? 844-747-8868 is our toll-free number. That's 844-747-8868. I've got to share this story with you. One of my favorites. We have it up on the website. This is coming from the University of North Carolina in Asheville. And the university very concerned about the psyche of their students, the children who attend at the University of North Carolina, Asheville. So in the days leading up to the Derek Chauvin verdict, the university decided they needed to do some things to make sure that the students were not triggered. So they decided to create healing spaces for Black and African-American students in the aftermath of the trial. Now, you have to understand, all of this was segregated, so no white students were allowed to enter the healing space for Black students at the campus. And keep in mind that on many university campuses, this is becoming very popular. Segregation is now very woke on university campuses. It's in vogue, if you will. So they also, and this is according to the Young Americas Foundation, so the university also sponsored a racial trauma yoga session. Again, only minorities allowed, no white folk allowed in this thing. Now, I don't know what it is. What is a racial trauma yoga session? Have you ever heard of such a thing? It's unbelievable. So the university president, the chancellor, is defending all of this. She says that we've got a problem in America with recurrent deaths of black and brown people, along with anti-transgender legislation. You see, they always have to wedge in the transgender folks. You know, it's not that, you know, the BLM crowd just can't be BLM. They've always got to wedge in the transgender folks. So everything is always about the transgender movement. Nancy Cable, or Cobble, is the chancellor of UNC Asheville. She says they created two healing spaces, one for the black children and the other for trans, non-binary, and gender non-conforming children. I wonder what that yoga class looked like. So anyway, the university's defending all of this, and they're saying that they are an inclusive space, and they provide all sorts of programmatic activities for the children. By the way, they also offered something called a meltdown class, and I kind of like this class. I want to describe the class to you. This is a scream, punch, and kick class in 15-minute increments, encouraging students to vent their frustration. I got to tell you, I don't know much about racial trauma yoga, but I have seen somebody's half moon yoga inadvertently become a full moon yoga. And that was a very traumatic moment for me, yours truly, the host of this radio program. So there you have it. So you say, Todd, is this really UNC Asheville? It is the Berkeley of the South. And I know this because a couple of years ago, I was in Asheville, and they have full-blown drum circles as the sun is setting, people banging their bongos and all other stuff. You should see those people cavorting about. But worse than that, they have a barbecue joint that serves tofu. And that's like a sin against God and humanity. And no sweet tea. I mean, what southern city doesn't have sweet tea? I'm telling you, it's the Berkeley of the South. All right, folks, watch those half-moon yogas. We'll be right back. Hey, folks, welcome back to the Todd Starnes Radio Show. Good to have you with us today. A lot of good calls as well. Good job, everybody. 844-747-8868 is our toll-free telephone number. That's 844-747-8868. By the way, some of the initial ratings reports are coming in from last night. President Biden getting 11.6 million viewers in the early results, which is way down from President Trump. And ABC News apparently topped all broadcasters. So there you go. I want to go to the Liberty University newsmaker line, our good friend from the great state of Georgia, Congressman Jody Heiss, who hopes to be the next Secretary of State of the state of Georgia. Congressman, hope you're doing good.
I am doing great. Good to be with you.
Hey, you know, we've been getting some reaction on Biden, but I'm curious to know what you thought about Senator Tim Scott's rebuttal to the president.
That was the speech of the night. There's no question about it. Tim Scott was authentic. He was personal. He spoke from the heart. He was inspiring. He was visionary. Everything he said, I thought he did an outstanding job. One of the best. Probably it'll go down as one of the best rebuttal speeches ever, I thought. I thought he did a superb job.
I thought he delivered in tone and tenor exactly what needed to be done last night, especially, you know, when you had Joe Biden out there making all of these, you know, smears against America, saying that, you know, white supremacy is, you know, the biggest threat to terrorism we have here. I just, you know, again, it was sort of night and day.
It really was. And, you know, in addition to all the progressive policies and progressive promises that he made, I looked at this and it just seemed like political plagiarism was taking place as well, as he's taking credit for the vaccines and taking credit even for the economy rebounding. I mean, let's all remember, we had the strongest economy probably in the history of our nation under President Trump. And then COVID came along, which, of course, pulled the rug out from underneath it. But he was in process of rebuilding that economy, and it was showing phenomenal signs of growth as he left the White House. And here's President Biden taking credit for all of that. It just I couldn't stand listening to someone taking credit for things for which he had absolutely no credit to take.
You know, Congressman, when you listen to the president's remarks, when you read the transcripts, this guy comes across as being even more progressive, more to the left than Barack Obama. And some of our listeners have said, you know what? They think Obama is actually pulling the strings here and making the decisions behind the curtains.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that Obama is involved. But listen, there's a lot of folks involved in this administration and a lot of progressives. I mean, you've got the whole AOC squad. You've got Hollywood personnel. You've got your George Soros types. You know, all these people have an open door to this administration. And there's no question that Obama, I feel certain, is likewise involved in one capacity or another. But it's incredible, just across the board, the number of progressive individuals that this White House has opened up to, has given a major seat at the table. And that is evident by the executive orders and the policies that are being promoted from this White House. It is stunning. It's frightening, really, Todd, as you look at it. It's just a frightening thing to consider, this type of policies that are being promoted from the administration of the United States.
And again, I mean, this is going to shove our country down the path to socialism, which will eventually become communism. But there's no way around it when you look at these policies. Who's giving people jobs? It's the government. Who's giving people money to live? It's the government. The government is doing everything under the Biden administration. They want to be the parent of America.
That's right, and they keep talking about free this and free that, and people need to understand there is nothing that's free. Someone's paying for it, and in this case, it's going to be higher taxes. And look, I was offended by the continued reckless comments of the wealthy paying their fair share, and again, it's government determining what their fair share should be. And the more we strap the business community and those who are creating jobs and providing jobs, the more we make it difficult for them to do what the free enterprise system does the best and shackle the greatest economic engine in the history of the world, the more we shut that down, everybody suffers and government gets bigger and bigger because they then become the solution to the problem. And that's the pathway that we seem to be on. And you're exactly right. It's a pathway to socialism. It's absolutely terrifying to watch our liberties erode while government becomes more and more prominent in our lives in dictating and telling us everything that we can and cannot do.
The point of the speech last night for me, and this goes back to Senator Scott, when he came out and emphatically said that America is not a racist nation, that to me spoke volumes. And I know he's come under fierce fire from MSDNC and CNN over that. But I think that needed to be said last night.
Well, it did need to be said. Look, that does not mean, and his comment does not imply, that there are no racists in America. But as a country, we have dealt with this issue over the years. And your average American is not a racist individual. We are accepting of one another. We are accepting of all races. We are a melting pot, and we accept that. What we are, however, and that we're losing, is the fact that we are Americans. We all rally around certain principles and values that we all cherish: liberty, the pursuit of happiness, and the right to pursue our dreams, and government staying off our backs all the time. These are the type of things that have always been traditionally American values that, regardless of race or ethnicity, that we have gathered around. And that statement needed to be said because it is a true statement. It's something that we need to recognize and get back to. And frankly, Todd, we're not going to have healing in this country as long as we keep going around and throwing blanket statements that everyone who's white is a racist, for example. We're hearing these kind of things on a regular basis. Those are divisive, and they're untrue.
Well said. Congressman, we're going to have to leave it there. We always appreciate you coming on the program. Thanks a lot. Good luck out on the campaign trail.
Thank you, Todd.
All right, Congressman Jody Heiss from Georgia wants to be the next Secretary of State there in the Peach State. Look, I've got to ask you guys a question. I've never heard of this thing. It's trending on Twitter right now. Something called an apology dinner. Have you guys ever heard of these? This is apparently when you do something horribly wrong, so horrible that a simple "I'm sorry" will not suffice. You apparently have to go and cook the offended party some sort of a meal. And there is, this is trending on Twitter right now. I want to read this to you. Apparently, one of the apology dinners has gone wrong. I've never heard of such a thing. So my mom decided to host an apology dinner for my older sister. As my mom was busy writing her apology and whatnot, she asked if I would take care of the food and beverages. I said, sure, thinking it was just for a family of four. But when my aunt and cousins heard, they also wanted to attend, so I decided to make it a potluck. Potluck is where all the guests bring a dish and all the dishes are shared. Can I stop right here for a moment? In the Baptist faith tradition, and I can't speak to any other traditions, but we do this on our Wednesday night church meal or when you have the homecoming. You know, in the summertime when you have the homecoming and you celebrate the anniversary of the church and all the old members come and there's a Southern Gospel group and you have all day preaching and eating and all that kind of stuff. So typically what happens is like the letters A through whatever bring a dessert. The next batch of letters in the alphabet, if your last name starts with an M, you bring the vegetables or the potato salad and so on and so forth. And then the church will provide, you know, the fried chicken or the smoked pork butt. Anyway, I digress. We call that potluck, though. So the person goes on to write here, of course, I never asked my sister to bring any food because she was the guest of honor. And that seems to make sense. I mean, if she's the one who has been offended, you would not want to make the offense even worse by asking her to bring a dish. Well, everyone came over, and we were all excited to listen to the apology and eat. My sister was among the last to arrive, and she was offended that we were serving potluck for her special dinner. I explained that I had carefully planned what would be served. My sister's boyfriend is a vegetarian, so he had two meatless options. Can I just stop right here? Well, that's the problem. She's dating a vegan. I mean, come on. But she went out of her way to accommodate the vegetarian boyfriend. But my sister yelled at me that the apology meal should be prepared by the apologizer in order to show proper atonement. These people are nuts. We went forward with the apology dinner, but my sister called me a blank hole for undermining the apology. And now she wants to know if she's in the wrong because she arranged a potluck dinner for her sister's apology. May I just offer a suggestion? Run as far away from that family as humanly possible. That's what you need to do. But I'm telling you, I think the bigger problem is the sister's got the vegetarian boyfriend. That's a problem. 844-747-8868. That's 844-747-8868. This is the Todd Starn Show.
Triggering microaggressions from coast to coast. It's Todd Starnes.
One day shy of the 100th day of my administration. 100 days since I took the oath of office and lifted my hand off our family Bible and inherited a nation, we all did, that was in crisis. The worst pandemic in a century. The worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. The worst attack on our democracy since the Civil War.
All right, welcome back to the Todd Stearns Radio Show. That was President Biden yesterday saying that what happened at the Capitol in January was worse than the 9/11 terrorist attacks, when Muslims flew jetliners into the World Trade Center towers and the Pentagon and then crashed in a field in Pennsylvania, that what happened in January was worse than that. And nobody called out Joe Biden over that outrageous comment. Nobody did. As a matter of fact, people were lavishing praise on the president. Here's Brian Williams from NBC News.
Something to think about when we do see Joe Biden come down this aisle. Again, 36-year veteran of the Senate. But so far, because of the pandemic, and he's never used terms of victimization, he has been robbed of so much of the majesty and pomp of the job. Campaign stops, convention speech. After he won, giving his acceptance in a parking lot in Wilmington, an inaugural address before an empty mall in Washington, D.C.
Oh, they loved it. And you had CNN, and they were just heaping all sorts of praise on Biden, talking about his grandfatherly voice. By the way, Biden had a couple of gaffes as well. Cut 11, please.
Win the 21st century. We're at a great inflection point in history. We have to do more than just build back better. We have to build back better. We have to compete more strenuously than we have. Throughout our history, if you think about it, public investment...
So wait. So the guy says, we're not going to build back better. We're going to build back better? That makes no sense.
Century.
All right.
We're at a great inflection point in history. We have to do more than just build back better. We have to build back better.
Hubbity, 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 hubbity. Can we get somebody from like a Pentecostal law? Maybe they can interpret what that said. The guy's speaking in tongues. Never heard of such a thing. I will say this. There have been some that were actually critical of the president. Robin Roberts over at ABC Good Morning America, she had the vice president on. And, you know, the vice president was put in charge of the border and has yet to go to the southern border, gone to everybody else's border, but not the southern border.
Talking about immigration, he did not lay out a concrete plan with dealing with the surge of migrants, especially at the border. And that's your task. That's a job that he has handed you. So can you be specific with immediate plans that you will have in facing this issue?
So, Robin, what he mentioned is that I am responsible for and have been taking on the responsibility of dealing with the root causes of migration.
All right. So anyway, Kamala Harris is saying, yeah, when he put me in charge, he didn't really put me in charge. I mean, nobody does. Nobody thinks I'm going to go down there and fix the border. But of course she is. She's supposed to, but they're not going to make her. And I'm telling you, you watch what's happening. Liz Peek has a terrific column up at toddstearns.com, and she lays all of this out. She doesn't think that Kamala Harris is ever going to be president. And she thinks the Biden administration is actually putting her in a box. So we'll see how all this plays out. But a lot of political shenanigans going on last night. Kamala Harris, even though she was put in charge of the border, she's not going down there because she knows that if she steps foot on that border, she owns it. It's hers. And she's not going to do that. All right, coming up in the next hour of the show, our good friend Senator Marsha Blackburn is going to be here. Also, we're going to be talking to a guy who wants to be the next mayor of New York City. By the way, Bill de Blasio, he says that summertime is going to happen in New York City. So they're going to let people live their lives starting July 1st in the Big Apple. We're going to see about that. Now, there was a survey done, and this is an important survey for our crowd, especially since I have a book coming out about biscuits. The book, by the way, Our Daily Biscuit, Devotion with a Drawl. It's a great country-themed book. So you may say, Todd, I live in New York City. Well, if you have a country mindset, if you believe in traditional values, you're going to love this book. So country is not a place. It's a state of mind. So anyway, they've got a brand new survey out, the USA Today Best Reader's Choice Awards. And they have listed the best biscuits in America. And I'm curious, and we're going to open up the phone lines on this. I'm going to share their list coming up after the news break. But I am curious to know from our listeners, where can you get the best biscuit in America? Is it may be your home, it may be a restaurant or a hotel, I don't know. But where have you had, where have you experienced the best biscuit in America? And yes, for our New York crowd, we'll throw in a bagel. Where have you had the best bagel in America? Where have you been able to get the best bagel with a schmear? 844-747-8868 is our toll-free telephone number. That's 844-747-8868. I've actually looked over this list, and I agree with the winner. And here's the clue. They're from North Carolina. And it's actually a very good biscuit. But we'll be taking your calls on that in the next hour of the show. Also talking a lot of politics with Marsha Blackburn. We have a crazy religious liberty story. A pastor arrested for reading a Bible verse. And we're going to tell you what Bible verse got him in trouble. This is the Todd Starnes Radio Show. We'll be right back.
From Memphis, Tennessee, on the banks of the mighty Mississippi, it's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, hello, America. Welcome to Hour 3 of the big show. Good to have you with us today. Wherever you might be, across the fruited plain, border to border, coast to coast. Lots of great conservatives out there, and we've had some great conversations today. Got a lot more going on this hour of the show. By the way, our website, toddstarnes.com, lots of great information for you there. Our live show blog up and running. And also, be sure to download our new podcast, which is brought to you by the Salem Radio Network. And we're very excited about the growth. Over 1 million of you have already downloaded the podcast, and I just can't thank you enough for that. Well, look, a lot of reaction coming in from yesterday, last night, that speech by President Biden and the incredible rebuttal coming from Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina. I want to go right now to the Liberty University Newsmaker line and a good friend of this program and a great American patriot, Senator Marsha Blackburn. Senator, good to have you back with us.
It is so good to be with you. Thank you so much.
You know, I want to get your reaction to the speech that Senator Scott delivered. That's a tough job anyway. And he delivered a home run last night, in my estimation.
Oh, my goodness. It was absolutely so beautifully delivered. He had worked hard on that speech. He had done such a magnificent job of pulling his thoughts together and fitting all of that in 15 minutes. He said so much more, and he said so much more that was meaningful in his 15 minutes than President Biden did in over an hour.
You know, you're absolutely right there. And the way he wove his family history, his faith, brought it all together and addressed really one of the big issues of the day, which is the Democrat Party trying to divide this nation along racial lines. And I thought he just really hit back so effectively. And based on the attacks he's getting today from the mainstream media, I think he struck a chord with voters across the country.
I think he did strike a chord with voters across the country, and people listened to him. And I will tell you this. I talked to Tim today, and we talked a little bit about the speech last night. His heart was pounding, but he knew that he was being prayed for through that speech, and he was really relying on that.
And I think that certainly made the difference, and it certainly showed in the remarks he shared. Then you have President Biden, who promised that we were going to be heading into a dark winter. And I know the media says it was an uplifting speech. I don't know what they were watching. That wasn't what I saw.
I have to tell you, when I heard the accolades for that speech, I thought, what in the world, my goodness, because it was difficult to understand him. It was basically a recitation of leftist ideas. The leftist base got exactly what they wanted out of Joe Biden last night, which was a promise to double down on all of these failed policies of the past. They are pushing this Marxist thread of trying to supplant the nuclear family with the federal government. They're trying to centralize power in Washington, D.C., and they really dug into this. You know, you look at the American Family Plan and the promises there for all sorts of assistance, putting $200 billion into preschool for 3 and 4 year olds, putting over $100 billion into free junior college. These are things that they think they have to do, that they must do in order to take those decision-making processes and choice away from families, is put the government in there providing that service. And, you know, they were talking about all sorts of things in the rescue plan, food, rent, plussing up Obamacare, and looking at what they're going to do with family medical leave. And what we know, they were saying, we're going to cut the poverty rate for children in half. But, Todd, you know, we have to go back and really do a deep dive on programs similar to this, like the New Deal and the Great Society, and see what kind of effect that did have. What kind of effect did it actually have in improving the lives of individuals?
Oh, when he started quoting FDR, my eyebrows just raised. And then when you look at the price tag on this, you understand what's about to happen to this country. I mean, we're talking about jobs that are being funded by our tax dollars. We're not talking about people going out there and starting new businesses. And beyond that, Congresswoman, and you know you are a businesswoman yourself, these mandatory, you know, $15 an hour minimum wage, the fact they're going to start taxing businesses even more, that's going to end up with more people on the unemployment line.
Well, indeed it will, because what they're doing is saying, we're going to centralize this power in D.C. We're going to provide the dictates and tell you what you're going to do with this money. And we've already seen this, as they have, and bear in mind, since he was sworn in on January 20th, they have already spent about $6 trillion. I mean, they are just running the numbers off those credit cards. And I had somebody the other day tell me they had a hand calculator they use on their desk, and it doesn't even go to trillions. And they were making the point that, you know, we're in this unknown territory. But, Todd, here's one of the things, and you've heard me through the years talk about the federal budget. And when George Bush left office, we were complaining about having $10.6 trillion in debt. And that is all the debt our country had built up from the time of George Washington to George W. Bush. And then he turns over the White House to President Obama. President Obama and Joe Biden, during their 8 years in office, nearly doubled the nation's debt. And then we're at $20 trillion. And then we added a couple of trillion to that strictly because of COVID, and added to it through the Trump years, more than I would have liked. But now look at what President Biden is doing, and how in this short period of time, you're looking at this extraordinary level of spending, which is outside of the regular appropriated funds of the federal government. It is astounding, and the price tag is something people continue to talk about? And how is it that they're going to put this money into the system? Is it going to end up being something that becomes a recurring expense? There are just so many questions around it.
Senator, we're going to have to leave it there, and we always appreciate you coming on the program. By the way, folks, we've got a link to her book, The Mind of a Conservative Woman, Seeking the Best for Family and Country, over on our live show blog. And, Senator, I have to tell you, my student worker, Charlotte, at Liberty University, she said she's a huge fan of yours, and she says that you are a great role model for Republican women. So I just wanted to pass that along to you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Good stuff.
Take care.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Marsha Blackburn, ladies and gentlemen, great senator from the state of Tennessee and doing some good work for this country. And I'm telling you, folks, there are a lot of squirrels that we can chase. But the ultimate thing we need to be looking at here is where the money is going. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, I've got to share this biscuit story with you. And if you missed the last few moments of the last hour, we just have a simple question, and we're going to be taking your calls on this. Where is the best biscuit in America? Where have you gotten the best biscuit in America? 844-747-8868. We're going to share with you the USA Today list. I want to hear yours. 844-747-8868. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Todd Starnes.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Todd Starnes radio program. Yeah, we got a lot of politics to talk about, but every now and again, we got to take a break from politics, and we got to talk about the important things in life, like how to smoke a pork butt, or, you know, where to get a good biscuit in America. Otherwise, life would be pretty insane. So we've got to have those moments in the show where we can step back from the abyss and talk about where to get a good buttermilk biscuit. And we're taking your calls on this. There's a list, an official list of the best biscuit places in America. But I'm curious to know where you get your biscuits. Let's go to the phones, 844-747-8868. Now, I'm very intrigued because we have Roger from Portland, Maine. And Roger, I got to be honest with you. I'm very hard-pressed to find a good biscuit north of the Mason-Dixon line. But you tell me, you, Roger, in Portland, Maine, have found a great biscuit joint.
There is a wonderful biscuit joint in Biddeford, Maine. It's called Biscuits and Company, and it's a Maine farm-to-table breakfast and lunch. Great little restaurant. It's kind of like your grandmother's kitchen, and it's run by my sister. My sister owns it.
Is
and
that
if you're
right?
This way, check it out. Yep.
Now, look, we're going to be doing a book tour starting in the summertime, and I've already been in touch with Ray Richardson at WLOB, and we're going to be doing a book signing somewhere in Portland. And Roger, you got to make sure I get over to Biscuits and Company so I can get sample this.
Well, you give me a call, and I'll take you there personally.
All right. So all you folks in Portland, Maine, you have it from Roger, and he sounds like he knows his biscuits. Biscuits and Company, and go check it out and let us know what you think. Roger, thanks for the intel. Let's go to Bryant, Arkansas. Rick is listening to us on KARN. All right, Rick, where can we find the best biscuits in Arkansas?
The only place you can find that is at my house.
Oh, is
and
that
my wife makes the yes, my wife makes the best buttermilk biscuit, puts it out on wax paper and cuts it all off with the mason jar lid and all that.
Rick, you know your wife knows how to make biscuits if she's got the mason jar.
Oh man, there's nothing my wife don't make that I don't like other than macaroni salad. I don't care if Jesus Christ makes it, I ain't eating that. But anyway,
Rick, hang on. Go ahead, Rick.
Buttermilk biscuit and bacon gravy and some ground-related sugar on it, man, you're going to go in a diabetic coma. I grant you that.
Well, I think I just clogged an artery hearing you describe it here, Rick.
I'm telling you.
All right.
Hey, I had a heart attack back in November, you know. So
are you doing okay now?
And gravy.
Well, you know, they say gravy's a lubricant, but I'm not sure about that. That's what they say. It's
well, I don't know. I never heard that, but it is definitely
clog up those arteries.
And your artery killer.
All right. Well, but you know, Rick, if you gotta go, I mean, you may as well go with a smile on your face. You know what I mean?
You're gonna go happy. You might as well do it right.
Just pass. I'll have an extra biscuit, please. I love it.
That's right.
All right, Rick. Good stuff. So Rick just became the most popular husband in all of Arkansas. So I bet you know what? I bet Rick's going to get some biscuits tonight with some of that bacon gravy he was talking about. And what did he say? Sprinkle some sugar on the top? Oh, my word. All right, 844-747-8868. We're looking for the best biscuits in America. Karen knows where to find them over in Gainesville, Georgia. She's listening to us on WDUN. Hi, Karen. How are you today?
Yes. I am great, thank you. But the best biscuits are at Reed's Cafe in Murrayville, which is a little tiny town between Gainesville and Dahlonega, Georgia. And they call them cat heads because the biscuits are really as big as a tomcat's head. They're huge, and they're amazing.
Now,
but they're only open Monday through Saturday. They're not open Sunday, and they're only open for breakfast and lunch, so you have to get there early.
Is that right? So, and they have the cat head biscuits.
Yes, and at first it sounds kind of gross, but it's really just because the biscuits are as big as a tomcat's head. That's a big biscuit.
That's a huge biscuit, and, you know, we're going to be in Gainesville on our book tour, so we're going to have to make a point of stopping by Reed's Cafe, and you said it's in Murrayville?
It is. It's just a few miles west of Gainesville going towards Dahlonega.
All right. This is good to know. We're doing intel for the book tour. That's what we're doing, Karen. So because we try to eat well when we're out on the road.
Well, Reed's has the best breakfast, and definitely get the cat head.
All right. You know what, Karen? I'm going to do that. I'm going to tell them when we show up, Karen from Gainesville said, you know, we've got to have the cat head biscuit.
They will definitely get you some good cat heads. They're awesome.
All right. Good stuff. Karen, thanks for the call. Appreciate that. By the way, there is there's also my favorite hot dog joint is in Gainesville, Georgia, over at the Collegiate Grill, and I think they're in downtown Gainesville. But if you're ever there, you stop in and get a chili dog with coleslaw on top, and you're gonna be hugging me forever. I'm just telling you, it's a good hot dog. What can I say? So anyway, there's a new story out here, and this ties into the biscuits, which is why we're talking about it. A Business Insider has got a big survey on the new top regional food chains, and one of them is a place called Cookout. Cookout is sort of like a burger joint, and Kyle, our board op, is actually in a worship position right now when I mentioned Cookout. And they're also owned by Christians, so when you go to their restaurant, they've got Christian music playing. It's really a great environment and great food. But the top chain is a place called Biscuitville. And when I was in Mount Airy, North Carolina, speaking, I think last year at an event over there, I went to Biscuitville. And they're only open, I think, from breakfast and then lunch, and that's it. They shut down. And honestly, folks, one of the best biscuits I've had at a fast food joint. But it's called Biscuitville. And it's a privately held fast food joint. They've got about 62 locations, primarily in North Carolina and Virginia. So if you're ever over in that area, we have a lot of folks listening to us at Liberty University. You know what I'm talking about because you got a Biscuitville there. But can I be honest with you? One of the biscuits I do not enjoy, it's from Cracker Barrel. I don't know what's happened, but it's kind of hit or miss with those guys. And I'm just not impressed with the biscuits over at the Cracker Barrel. So it is what it is. I know that may be heresy to some of you, but go figure. All right, 844-747-8868 is our toll-free telephone number. That's 844-747-8868. Coming up, we're going to be speaking to a guy. He's running for mayor of New York City, and he's a Republican, and the guy is pretty rock solid. It's going to be a great conversation, but there's a lot of concern about the future of New York City. And honestly, the city looks like it did before Rudy Giuliani took over. Crime, people getting shot all over the place, rats out the wazoo. Well, we're going to talk about it. 844-747-8868. We're also taking your calls on biscuits, too. We'll be right back. So I got a message the other day from my old building that I lived in Brooklyn, New York, before we moved out and evacuated the city. And they were turning it into a condo building, so they were selling the apartments. And there was no way, if I'd have been there, I would have had to have moved. But they were asking for like $1.4 million for a one-bedroom apartment, which is actually a pretty good price, you know, in downtown Brooklyn. But they had dropped, the whole point of the email, they had dropped the price by almost $500,000. It's unbelievable because the city is falling apart under Comrade Bill de Blasio and the Crypt Keeper, Andrew Cuomo. I mean, people are evacuating the city. Real estate prices are taking a tumble. There was a video somebody sent me the other day. They were just walking along the sidewalk, and all of a sudden, a herd of rats the size of Cathead biscuits was just rambling through the streets of New York. Well, our next guest wants to do something about this, and he believes he has the solution to what's ailing New York City. I want to go to the Liberty University newsmaker line and welcome a guy they call an urban Republican, Fernando Mateo. Fernando, good to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So I guess we should start by asking, what is an urban Republican?
An urban Republican is a Republican that has basically created and solved the problems that Democrats haven't been able to solve for the city of New York. An urban Republican is a Republican that is a capitalist, that teaches capitalism, and that comes from the urban areas of New York City. An urban Republican is one that has taken on challenges to reform Rikers Island, to disarm the city and get guns off of the guys that shouldn't have guns in their hands. An urban Republican is the guy that saved the lives of thousands of taxi drivers throughout New York City and thousands of bodega owners because Democrats simply weren't able to do it. So although we live in a Democratic city, predominantly 8-1 are Democrats, Democrats have done little, if nothing, to solve the problems of the inner city, to solve the problems of the poorest people in New York. So as an urban Republican, I have basically filled that gap. I have taught and trained those that mostly needed because Democrats weren't capable or able to do it. An urban Republican is someone that has thrived in business and has created thousands of jobs in New York City for Democrats to have work and opportunity. So an urban Republican is really someone that can take control of this city and make it what it should be once again. The best 20 years that we've had were under the rule of Republican leaders like Giuliani and like Bloomberg and like George Pataki. When we had those three Democrats in power, our city was thriving. Right now, our city is back to where we were in 1988, 89, 90, and 92. It's a disaster. So every time a Democrat takes over city government or state government, they destroy the progress that we were able to make under a Republican leadership.
And Fernando, let me jump in here. I think that, and they want it that way. I mean, I used to hear people talking, and I lived in New York City for 15 years, and they were lamenting, the leftists were lamenting about the rundown conditions in Times Square. And they said, well, it looks too much like a shopping mall, as if there's a problem with moms and dads and tourists coming in and spending money in New York City.
New York City is a city, it's the financial capital of the world. It's where the clock ticks. What happens in New York City is basically everyone wants to emulate, except for now. New York City right now is a disaster. It's a war zone. 50 shootings last week alone, unheard of. Our shootings and our violence is up over 200% over last year. Last year was up over 100% over the year before. We need a change, and I believe that Democrats understand that. They know it, and I am that change. I'm that person that's going to create the changes that are needed to make our city safer. And just so that you know, I'm the only true Republican in this race. I voted for Donald Trump twice. I support and I believe in the values of the Republican Party. But we have a bigger problem, is that we have a person that has infiltrated our party and is trying to cause division so that the Democrats win again. And that's a guy by the name of Curtis Sliwa. He was never a Republican, never supported Trump, voted and campaigned against every Republican leader in this city. And all of a sudden, last year, he became a Republican for the first time in his life. And he is trying to now win a primary that he doesn't deserve so that we can lose the general elections. I'm the only guy with the possibility of winning the general election. As an immigrant, Hispanic, my parents immigrated into the U.S. legally in 1950. And we have become the American dream. We've achieved it. And we cannot allow for an infiltrated Republican now, Curtis Sliwa, to come on board and try to win the primary so that he can lose the general election.
You know, Fernando, you're bringing up a very important point, and this is something for Republicans across America to understand. There are fake Republicans out there. There are fake conservatives out there, and you got to do your homework, folks. And you've got to listen. I mean, Fernando, you come with the street cred. Not only that, I mean, you are a business owner, so you know what it's like to employ people, hiring, firing people. You know what it's like to make your community better by having a strong business.
Listen, I know what the Republican values are, and that is what I am teaching every Democrat in New York City. If I was able to make it, you will be able to succeed. You need to stop taking welfare. You need to stop taking free money from the Democrats because they do that to try to keep you poor. We need to empower ourselves, and we need to really re-register our faith and our alliance to the Republican Party, because we are a party of progress, a party that wants you to succeed versus the Democrats who want to keep you always in the poorhouse by offering you things that they can't deliver or that will cost you more later. So I am slowly but surely educating New Yorkers about that, but we need to be very careful about those Republicans that infiltrate our party to try to destroy us from the inside. We need to watch out and see who are the real faithful Republicans. I will make sure that this city, that we refund our police. I will make sure that public safety is the first and most important item of the day when I am mayor. I will reform bail reform. I will not shut down Rikers Island. I would make it a rehabilitation center. I will create jobs for 14 to 18-year-old kids. When I was 14, I dropped out of school. I was adopted by a Jewish family who taught me the values of hard work, who taught me that racism exists only if it starts in your own mind, that you can be and you can create anything that you want to do in the United States of America. I want to make sure that these 14 to 18-year-old kids, after school, have a job where they can learn what being responsible is and what capitalism is all about. You know, I would create tax breaks for all of those companies that come back to New York, all of those small businesses that come back. I will give them tax breaks so that they can afford to reopen their businesses. And I would also make sure that I reassess property taxes and lower taxes. Small government, lower taxes is how we can rebuild New York.
Now, Fernando,
if we don't do it that way, we're dead in the water.
Fernando, let me jump in here. I'm curious to know how the response has been. Are you Can you tell us about folks you've run into? Maybe they voted Democrat, but now, you know, they're going to give the Republicans a shot.
I see a clear path to victory. I see that I will be the next mayor because the city desperately needs change. What we need to do right now is make sure that I get through the primary. Once I come out of the primary, we have a clear path because there are 2.5 million Hispanics in New York. And as you know, Donald Trump got more of the Hispanic vote in New York City than any other president in the history of our nation, which means that Hispanics are Republicans and they're trending towards our values. Therefore, with 2.5 million Hispanics in New York, all I need to do is get 300 to 500 Democratic votes to switch over, and we have won this race. Curtis Sliwa could never do that because he's not a Republican. He's not liked by the Hispanic community, and it's a deterrent to our values as a party. So if I have to ask Republicans across the nation, if they want to take our city back, the capital of the world back, they should go to MateoTheMayor.com, MateoTheMayor.com, and chip in and make sure that I can win these primaries, because once we move past the primaries, we will have a Republican city, and we desperately need it because we lost our federal government. We lost Washington. We have lost everything. The city of New York is all we have right now to bring us back. Governor DeSantis has done an amazing job in Florida. I will do an amazing job here in New York. We will elect a Republican governor once I am mayor, and we will get things back on track where they should be. But it's got to start with the Republicans believing that a Republican can win New York City. As an urban Republican, I can win. There's a clear path to victory. None of the Democrats have done 10% of what I've done for this city. If you put them all in a blender and you pour them into a glass, 10% is what you're going to get versus 100% of me. So we need the support of the Republicans nationwide. We need for us to wake up. We need to bring back the values, and we need to bring back what we believe in, which is progress, safety, police, law and order. Those are the most important things, and jobs.
All right, Fernando, we are going to have to leave it there. Good stuff. Where can people go if they want to get some information on your campaign?
MateoTheMayor.com. Remember, it's Mateo the Mayor, not Mateo for Mayor. And what they can do is just help us fix New York City. Let's fix New York. They can go to Chip In, and they can make a donation there to my campaign because, as you know, you can't win without money. And we need the support, the votes, and the money of every Republican in New York City.
All right. Fernando, good luck to you out there. And, again, big Republican primary. Folks, do your homework. Know who you're voting for. Be smart out there. All right, Fernando, good luck to you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
All right, Fernando Mateo is running for the Republican nod in New York City. And, man, has it been an ugly Republican primary. Sliwa is slinging a lot of mud. Called the guy in a debate a de Blasio Republican. But the reality is they asked a single question of both candidates. Who voted for Trump and who didn't? And this guy says he voted for Trump. Sliwa says he did not vote for Donald Trump. So you can figure that out yourself. But I can tell you, New York City is in a world of hurt right now. And they're going to have to do something. I mean, the crime rate is out of this world. And if they do not, I'm telling you, if the city falls, we're going to get stuck picking up the pieces.
It's the Todd Starnes Radio Show.
All right, coming up tomorrow on the program, our good friend Bart Millard He's the lead singer of Mercy Me. He's going to be here. Also, Congressman Mo Brooks. Ran into Congressman Brooks down in Florida last week over at Newsmax headquarters. So that'll be it. We're going to have a great show tomorrow. Also, it's Friday. We're going to play a little bit of trivia, a chance for you to win some great prizes. Also, we have some brand new radio stations that join us starting Monday, and we'll tell you all about that a little bit later on next week. By the way, our good friend Doc Washburn, listening to us over in Little Rock, Arkansas on KARN. Todd, the best biscuit I've ever had was from Grandy's. It's a chain restaurant all over Texas. So there you go. If you're working on a list here, Grandy's biscuits over in the great state of Texas. By the way, President Trump is making a bit of headlines. He was on Maria Bartiromo's show earlier this morning. Here's what he had to say about a possible running mate and a run for the White House.
Are you thinking about running again, Mr. President, in 2024?
Yes, 100%. And the polls show it, and everybody wants me to do it. Well, 100%, I'm thinking about running, and we will, I think, be very successful. If we were very successful, look, I ran twice, and the second time I got 12 million more votes than the first time, which very rarely happens for a president. I got the largest number of votes in the history of our country for a sitting president, and I was told if I got 66 million, you couldn't lose. I got 75 million. At 10:30 in the evening, everyone thought the election was over and that we had won. All of a sudden, late in the night, they closed up the tabulation centers and they came out with new numbers. This election is a disgrace to our country. And the whole world knows it, and they're watching.
Mr. President, would you consider a running mate in Ron DeSantis? A lot of conversation about your relationship with Ron DeSantis. You're seeing him more in Florida. Would he be your pick for VP?
Well, he's a friend of mine. I endorsed Ron, and after I endorsed him, he took off like a rocket ship. He's done a great job as governor. A lot of people like that. You know, I'm just saying what I read and what you read. They love that ticket. But certainly Ron would be considered. He's a great guy.
All right, there you go. What do you think? Trump DeSantis in 2024. By the way, the president also had some things to say about Mitch McConnell in that interview with Maria Bartiromo. Says McConnell has not done a great job and says that he needs to be replaced. And if they don't, then the Republicans could lose in the midterm elections. So there you go. We're going to get into that tomorrow and do a deep dive on who else might possibly be looking at a run in 2024. Going to be a great show tomorrow. ToddStearns.com, folks, our website. Be sure to get yourself a free subscription to our newsletter. Also, our podcast. Again, you can do that at ToddStearns.com. Get out there. Have a great day, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show.